Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
I'm Manny.
And this is a spotlight episode on Detective Comics 1000. So, landmark issue. This is the second of the DC titles to reach 1000 after Action Comics hit the milestone last year. And I gotta say, now, you know, longtime listeners of podcasts are gonna know Superman. I vastly prefer Superman as a character to Batman. And I think I say vastly right now, and that's probably because I'm just, I don't know, there's so much Batman content out there these days.
This is Batman rules, bro.
Well, it wasn't always that case. There was a time, and this was right around the time that the Batman and Robin movie came out. So in 94, 95, no, I guess it would have been 1995. There was a time when, you know, I was all in, and I actually enjoyed that movie, and I think prefer that as my favorite of the original four Batman movies. I know a lot of
Batman and Robin?
Yeah, because I don't really like my, I know this is sacrilege, I don't really like Michael Keaton in the role.
Oh my God.
Because when I see Michael Keaton, like, play Batman in the first two movies, I look at that and I see, oh, it's Michael Keaton playing Batman. You know what I mean? Whereas Val Kilmer, now don't get me wrong, I don't think Val Kilmer is like the best Batman or whatever, but because he didn't really, it's not that great of an acting job. He didn't put that much of himself into the role, I feel like. When I look at Batman on the screen, I just see Batman. I don't see Val Kilmer. Where when I look at the Michael, you know what I'm saying? Like, Michael Keaton brought a lot to the role, and I understand, like, from a technical acting aspect or point of view, he did an incredible job, but I can't help but see him. You know, I'm aware when I'm watching it, hey, that's Michael Keaton playing Batman. When I watch the Batman and Robin one, again, because I don't think Val Kilmer did a particularly good job, and I'm a fan of Val Kilmer.
Batman and Robin was with George Clooney. Val Kilmer was in Batman Forever.
Okay, Batman Forever. That's the one I'm talking about. Batman Forever.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was. And for some reason in my mind, I flip-flopped those. I thought Batman Forever was the last one. But you're right. Yeah, it's Batman Forever. Now, I will admit that there are terrible aspects about Batman Forever. I think, you know, Jim Carrey, he's going to be over the top. And so he's that. I think it's probably one of the worst acting jobs that Tommy Lee Jones has ever done. He's completely, it's not a good Two-Face. He's just
over the top.
Yeah, because he's trying to compete on screen with Jim Carrey, who, you know, chews scenery like nobody's business. And Chris O'Donnell as Robin is just god awful. They could have. It's like Chris O'Donnell is playing a cardboard cutout of Robin. It's so flat, his performance. So yeah, I mean, the acting, whatever. But it was just a product of its time, mid-90s with a lot of the day glow. I kind of like the story. The gadgets are really cool. So. But my point being that I was so into Batman at that time. Superman was still my favorite character, but I was so into Batman that people around me, like, I remember getting that Christmas a Batman statue. At that point in my life, I didn't even own a Superman statue, but somebody thought, oh, I thought Batman was your favorite character, and one of my relatives, and got me a Batman Forever statue because they thought that was my favorite character. So, you know, there's been times where Batman has, you know, I've been a much bigger fan of Batman than other times. And I still, there are particular runs of Batman that I think are outstanding, that I could point to, you know, hey, this run of Batman is better than, you know, these 200 issues of Superman easily. I mean, Batman, he's a great character. There's a lot there to build off of.
Yeah, but I mean, you can say that with any character. There's always those sentinel or great stories that are way better than most stories from other characters.
Yeah, that's true. But I say that to say I do have love for Batman. I think that, you know, I just get a little tired of him only because there are so many Batman books. And I think, didn't we have this conversation on Twitter just the other
day? We have this conversation a lot, actually. Because yeah, I agree that it's, you know, saturated with Batman, Batman and the Outsiders, Batman Beyond. I mean, there was like Batman Noir,
Batman the Grave, Batman. Yeah, there's always a bunch of Batman, and Joker is just as bad now in my mind.
But the problem is, and it's not a problem, if you look at the sales, the books on top, Batman, 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 Batman. Yeah. And for a couple of years, it was like Batman, 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 Harley Quinn, Batman, Harley, Harley, Batman, and it's like, oh, well.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they're gonna put out what sells, so I get that.
Right.
But my point is, before the Batman Michael Keaton movie, actually, Batmania 1989, Batman rarely outsold Superman. Superman always outsold Batman. But it was from that time when Batman really moved more into the zeitgeist. And I think that was the first time the mainstream really saw Batman as the Caped Crusader, the Dark Avenger, whatever you want to call it. Because a lot, you know, when you talk about mainstream people, just your average Joe, you say Batman previous to that, and their first thought is probably that 1960s TV show with Adam West. Super campy, yeah. And kind of funny and not at all, you know, a more mature, dark take on Batman that Tim Burton brought to the screen. And so I think that that's part of the reason. Once people realize, oh, Batman's kind of cool. He's dark and brooding, and he, you know, doesn't take any crap from anybody. That's much different. Hey, Batman's kind of cool. And since that time, Batman has outsold Superman. We've talked before about how we feel that although that's the case, and Batman is the most popular and well-known character, or as well-known, the most popular, maybe just as well-known as Superman, but definitely outsells Superman. But as the Superman titles go, so goes DC. Manny and I have talked about that, you know, a lot of times. Superman is the character that kind of puts everybody else on his shoulders, including Batman, and brings them up to another level of storytelling. So I mentioned that, and I kind of give that story about how much I love Batman and have loved him in the past, to say that when I say that I didn't enjoy Detective Comics 1000 as much as I enjoyed Action Comics 1000, it doesn't come from a place of saying, well, I liked Action Comics 1000 more because I like Superman more than Batman. I think fundamentally, the Action Comics 1000 issue did a better job of celebrating who Superman is and has been throughout his history than the Detective Comics 1000 did of celebrating Batman. I mean, we got a lot of who current Batman is, but it didn't really, for me at least, it didn't really bring back and harken back to previous iterations of Batman the way that Superman, it really felt like that Action Comics 1000 issue encompassed his entire history, especially but with having the story from Jeff Johns and Olivia Coppel that was like the story of one of the characters from the cover of Action Comics 1000, one of the gangsters that was in the car. I mean, here's a story, you know, right back from Action Comics number one that tied in. And so it really felt like it did a good job of encompassing all the history of Superman, where this didn't really feel like that. What do you think, Manny? Would you agree with that? You disagree?
So I agree and disagree, because I think that something that makes Superman stand out a little bit from Batman is that he doesn't really need his supporting cast as much as Batman does, because Batman's kind of only as good as his rogues gallery, and then also sometimes the addition of the Bat family, Alfred Pennyworth, while as Superman, he's the Man of Steel, he's faster than a locomotive, leap tall buildings in a single bound. I mean, he really has Lois Lane, sometimes Jimmy Olsen, but it's really focused on his character. Sure, he has Lex Luthor, and kind of a dark side, if you want to include him, whatever, and some other villains. But if you really think about it, when you think of Superman, his opponents don't necessarily stand out as much as Batman's. So when you're going to write Superman-centric stories, they're going to focus more on Clark Kent, on his family aspects, on his relationship with Lois, and just focus on the character, which is probably why you feel like, and also your favorite, why you feel like he does a better job. When you look at Batman, sometimes to kind of get more of him, you have to kind of focus on Alfred, you have to focus on the Joker, you have to focus on his son Damian. And so because of his popularity, probably more in this modern age, there's so much more noise around him that you kind of maybe even lose focus on who he actually is as a character, as opposed to this larger world that you keep building around him because you want to keep telling bigger and bigger stories with him.
Yeah, I guess I can kind of see your point. If you do Detective Comics 1000, you just focus on Batman, you don't really bring in other members of the Bat family or other Bat villains, you probably would have people saying, well, this is kind of boring. Like, where's all the cool things that make Batman who he is? Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I wish Superman had as colorful and as popular and as well-known a rogues gallery as Batman does. I won't even say with the exception of Spider-Man. I'd say maybe Spider-Man's the only one that comes close to rivaling Batman in terms of like colorful rogues gallery and people that he, you know, debuted in his comic and fought against him, you know, Dr. Octopus and Green Goblin and Sandman and Venom and, you know, all these other characters. Batman and Spider-Man are probably, and I don't think Spider-Man actually equals Batman. He's close, but I think Batman, you know, we start talking about the Joker, the Penguin, Riddler, you know, Ra's al Ghul. You just, can just go on and on and on. He has so many great villains. Catwoman, who may or may not be a villain these days, Poison Ivy, Harley Quinn. I mean, you know, she's the fourth pillar of the DC universe at this point. And, you know, she started off in the pages of Batman. So, yeah, I see your point, but I don't know. I still stand by what I said. I enjoyed the Action Comics 1000 more than I did the Detective 1000. So let's go story by story and just kind of give our thoughts. The first one is by Snyder and Capullo. So classic Batman creative team that relaunched Batman with New 52. It's called The Longest Case. And fair warning here, we're going to be spoilery if you haven't read it by now. What the heck are you waiting for? So I thought this was a fun story. It's basically the story of Batman's longest case, you know, clues he found in one of the very first cases he ever took on when he took on the Batman mantle. And he's followed these clues apparently whenever he's had time between other cases. And they finally now in modern times, apparently, I don't even know anymore how long Batman's supposed to have been active. But it leads him basically to a cabal or a group, a gathering of these other supposed, you know, best detectives in the DC universe. So I kind of feel it was a fun story, but at the same time, I kind of feel like I felt about the Court of Owls. Like, it's a great concept by Scott Snyder, but at the same time, it's like, with the Court of Owls, I'm like, wait, so they were operating under Batman's nose all this time? It doesn't really sit well with me. And so this was kind of the same thing. So Batman, you know, it's been said so many times, and we've had this conversation before about how Batman is at least the second best, second smartest person in the DC universe, right? He's like, he's the second best at everything. And so how are all these other people? I mean, he's supposed to be like the world's greatest detective. Like that, not second best at detecting, he's supposed to be the best. So you're telling me that Elongated Man and Slam Bat Bradley and The Question and Hawkman and Hawkgirl and Martian Manhunter and Bobo the Chimp, they're all better detectives than Batman because they got into this society first, the guild as it's called, the guild of detection or what have you. They all solved it first. And maybe it's because they weren't giving Batman the clue. And I get that. Like, maybe they just weren't providing Batman the clue so he couldn't solve it, or otherwise he would have solved it faster. They didn't feel he was ready. But I just don't see, it just doesn't sit right with me that he's supposed to be the world's greatest detective, but all these other people got into the guild first. Like, if he didn't solve it because they weren't giving him the clues, well, why not? What was it about him that he wasn't ready? Because in my mind, he's the world's greatest detective. He should have been the first one. He should have been the first one in the guild. He should have founded the guild, or at least been second. Maybe Hawkman was first because he's, you know, lived for so long and was present when all these things happened. So nothing was really a mystery to him. So that was the only thing that I really didn't like about it. I mean, it's a small nitpick. The story, the idea of it is super cool, that there's been these mysteries throughout time and there are still all these unsolved mysteries in the DC universe. And this guild of detecting has, you know, all these books upon books upon books of volumes of the mysteries of the universe. And they're all, you know, working on them from time to time. So yeah, super cool concept. The art by Capullo is up to his normal Batman standards. He really has kind of defined the look of the modern Batman in a lot of ways. And I think he doesn't draw him too huge. Sometimes I think that while I enjoy Jim Lee's art, Jim Lee's Batman is so big. He's so muscular that it just doesn't, like, how is he that acrobatic if he's that big? Like, how does he, you know, dodge and be graceful and things like that? So I like that Capullo's Batman is a little smaller in stature. And I especially loved the very last panel where Batman picks up one of these volumes. Slam Bradley has taken him down to show him all the volumes. He's saying, you know, some of these books are as old as recorded history. Maybe some of these mysteries are unsolvable. Some of them are brand new. But, you know, open up any book, open up a case, take a look. And I think you'll see you're only at the beginning. And the last panel is just Batman, you know, he's picked up one of these books. He's leafing through it. And his eyes get real big. And he says, wow. So that's the other part that maybe doesn't necessarily ring true to me. Batman being like wowed, because he just doesn't seem like the kind of character at this point that would ever be wowed by anything. But maybe that's maybe that's what Snyder's trying to tell us, that's how crazy and big these mysteries are that are still in the DC universe. But it was an enjoyable story. But yeah, just narratively, like timeline wise, I just don't know that it made sense to me. What did you think, Manny?
I think that the concept of the story was good. I think the approach was wrong. This is coming from a fan, not somebody necessarily criticizing the writing. Well, yeah, we're criticizing the writing. I think a better approach would have probably been to have these clues been left more recently, or just something that spanned a year or something, or have this guild come together recent instead of, oh, we've been here this whole time. Because you're right, it's pretty shady that they'd kind of leave him in the dark for so long, especially with the amount of work that he's done with, you know, Hawkman, Hawkgirl, and especially Martian Manhunter. So you can't tell me that they're leaving these clues and then just kind of like eyeballing him every now and then, and like, did he find out? Did he, you know, where is he with it? Isn't that? Yeah, you're right. If he's the world's greatest detective, as we are led to believe, then this is something that he maybe should have been a founding member of, or something that was put together recently, and he went through the clues pretty quick. And hey, we just put this together. We just wanted to make sure that you're up to speed and you're still your detective skills are still sharp or something like that, rather than, yeah, man, we've been here for ages. Well, finally, welcome. Because I just don't nothing against the other characters, but I don't see the question or elongated man or even Martian Manhunter. I don't see them outsmarting Batman in any corner. Matter of fact, I would have been surprised if he wouldn't have figured out that somebody was playing him this whole time before he got there, just because of the way the clues were laid out. It just seems a more Batman thing to do. Just he'll figure it out before you do.
Yeah, so I think we're in agreement. A super cool concept. And if you flip it and have, I don't know, the question in Batman's role, and have Batman, you know, having been one of the founding members, I think it's a fantastic story.
Yeah.
or Hawk Girl, or any of the rest of the characters, Slam Bradley, any of them coming in with Batman already there, it just makes more sense. But having Batman be the kind of the last one to the party, it just doesn't
make sense.
So cool concept, but yeah, I just question the kind of the timing of it. All right, well, the next story I think is, you know, it's my favorite story in the book, Detective 1000. It's called Manufacture for Use. It's written by Kevin Smith. Yeah, that Kevin Smith from like Jay and Silent Bob. Jim Lee on pencils, Scott Williams on inks, Alex Sinclair on colors, Todd Klein on letters. But we are going to talk a little bit about the Batman movie, the Matt Reeves Batman movie and Robert Pattinson, because they're borrowing a concept here from the story. And when it happened, when it got released online with some photos of Pattinson in the bat suit, it kind of got some backlash. And I want to talk about that, about why I think it worked here and it doesn't necessarily work there. So we have Matches Malone, which for those not familiar, it's basically Bruce Wayne's alter ego or disguise he uses when he goes into the underworld to try to get information. as opposed to, you know, going and trying to get information as Batman and beating the crap out of people. Matches is like this known figure in the underworld in Gotham City, kind of like a henchman type, maybe a little more, you know, not muscle, but a little more brains than muscle. So he shows up at this this pawn shop where the pawnbroker has like a secret back room where he keeps, he calls it the Gotham gift shop, and he keeps basically evidence and weapons and such that have been part of crimes that have occurred in Gotham. And he says, if it was featured in a Gotham crime and it's not in the Gotham City Police Department evidence room, it's you're going to find it here. And so as he talks about all the different kind of items that he has, the art that we see from Jim Lee is showing us Batman repeatedly being stabbed in the chest or shot in the chest or what have you by all these weapons. So the implication is that a lot of these types of weapons are the kind of weapons that you're going to find at the Gotham City gift shop. So Penguin stabbing him in the chest with an umbrella, Mr. Freeze shooting him in the chest with a freeze gun, Clayface punching him in the chest, and Batman's like, yeah, that's great that there's all these, you know, cool, crazy weapons, but I'm looking for something, you know, that has a little more history to it. And the pawnbroker's like, oh, you're looking for a gun, right? Like, I have guns. I have some of the most famous ones. And he talks about having one that was jammed by the Riddler, these twin guns that Two-Face used. And then Matches Malone points out one that's kind of – it's got, like, tape on the grip. It's kind of worn down. And it turns out it's the gun that was used to murder Bruce Wayne's parents. And so as the pawnbroker's telling that story, we see Batman being shot in the chest. We see Bane hitting him in the chest. We see Firefly shooting him in the chest. Again, it's everything is in the chest. Everything is right there in that that yellow oval that's on his chest that has the bat symbol. So Matches Malone purchases it, and the pawnbroker's happy, saying, "Yeah, you know, you really know your history, and you know, it's nice not to work with nice to work with a professional. That's this business full of animals." And again, we see Batman constantly being hit in that symbol by the Scarecrow, by Killer Croc, by Harley Quinn. And Bruce Wayne later is back in the Batcave, and he's got his gun. It's there under glass. And Alfred's like, oh, so you found it. He's like, you know, I never fought you over the giant penny, and I almost threw my back out helping you get that dinosaur, but I got to draw the line at adding the gun that killed your parents to your trophy collection. That's too grim even for you. And Bruce Wayne says, well, it's not going in the collection. This gun's never going to hurt anybody ever again. You know, this gun scarred me for life. And as he's telling this narrative, we again see that that theme of Batman being, you know, hit in the chest, hit in that symbol by Zaz, by Catwoman, by Scarface. And Bruce melts the gun down to just, you know, a hunk of metal, which he then hammers and shapes into a little shield, basically, that he puts in a pocket underneath that bat symbol. And he's saying that the same metal that broke his heart as a child is going to protect his heart as a man. And he says that is justice. So it's apparently it's supposed to be relatively early in his career. And, you know, you notice the kind of the pattern. It's kind of a hex pattern on the metal that he worked, that he, you know, melted the gun down and he created this shield. And if you go back and you look at all the times he was being hit in the chest, if his costume ever ripped or tore, that metal was there to protect his heart. So I thought when I read this, man, that's a really cool idea that Bruce Wayne went and found the gun that killed his parents. He melted it down and he created, you know, a little shield that he wears, you know, or that is part of his costume. It's underneath the emblem on his chest. That is a, you know, target. That's why it's there, to pull focus and make sure that, you know, Batman's the target and not some innocent, not one of his partners or what have you. But it pulls the focus there and he gets attacked there. And this metal shield that he's created out of this gun, that, where all the tragedy came from, is protecting him. So I thought it was a really cool story, really cool idea. And I wasn't surprised when I saw that they're borrowing it for the Matt Reeves movie. But I'll talk about why I think it doesn't work there in a minute. I want to hear what Manny had to say about this story.
one in the book as well. I just thought it was very simple, very well done. Showcases Batman's many battles with the variety of different villains, and it's all because of that singular moment when he was a child caused by that gun. So just the meaning behind it and the history of it, where it all started, what it led to, and now being able to use that tragedy, use that loss to become empowered and be able to bring justice and protect the city of Gotham. I thought that was really well done. And you can, you know, as with Kevin Smith writing it, you can really tell it's written from a fan's perspective. And if you add just the rest of that awesome creative team of Jim Lee and Scott Williams, Alex Sinclair, you get just a really, really nice, tight-knit story that is really, I think, the spotlight of the book, besides some of the artwork that's in later in the pages. And it's cool because they bring out a classic, which he's used multiple times, and it's just great to see. I can't really say much more about it. I think it's interesting that it hasn't, that idea hasn't been used more before. Maybe it has, and I've missed it. But it ends with kind of the tradition of Jim Lee Royal overlooking the city with his large cape. That's fitting. So, just overall solid story. Definitely also my favorite one in the book.
Yeah, I think I'd never heard of this before. I'd never heard of this concept before. I think maybe Kevin Smith was the first one. I mean, could be wrong. And correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, let me know if it's been used before. But yeah, I think Kevin Smith was the first one. But like I said, it appears they borrowed it for the Matt Reeves movie. What do you think about that? Think it works there as well?
I don't see why it wouldn't work with any Batman. Unless you have some sort of compelling argument as to why the gun can't be used as a symbol for of protection after it's brought him so much pain, and it just adds, I think, another layer of depth to the story and to his character thought behind it. And it's just, because Batman's so much about symbols, it just makes sense. And I'm not sure how much they're going to dive deep into Martha and Thomas Wayne, but obviously that's a very, very key part of any Batman story, because that's where his hunger for justice comes from.
Yeah. So again, I was surprised to see so much pushback online, and I was trying to understand where it was coming from. I think part of it is the fact that when you look at what the costume, the Batman costume looks like that Pattinson's wearing, and it clearly has the gun in the symbol. It's so here Bruce Wayne took the gun and he melted it down and he made a plate, and it's underneath, and it's not out there. It's not overt. And I think the problem that people had with them using this concept in the Matt Reeves movie is the fact that you can see the gun right there. And I kind of agree. I it doesn't work for me on that same level, because it's not necessarily glorifying it, but it's putting it out there, you know, as more visible. I like the fact that Bruce Wayne's doing this and Alfred knows about it, and Bruce Wayne himself obviously knows about it, but that's it. Nobody else knows. It's not anything that needs to be so overt. And I don't know, I guess with kind of the way people feel about gun violence in this country these days, maybe that's why there was so much pushback on it. It just seemed like a really, I don't know, kind of a crazy thing to do, right? Like take the gun that killed your parents and you're wearing it out there overtly. So I think maybe that's why. And if that's the case, and I see their point, and I think, yes, it doesn't work as well in that situation, the way that they're setting it up. And maybe just the difference in the way you tell stories live action versus the way you tell things in comics. You can do things in comics you can't do in live action and get away with more. It's a little more fantastical, if you will. So yeah, I mean, I'm reserving judgment because obviously I haven't seen the Matt Reeves Batman movie yet. But just purely based on concept, I think it works better in a comic versus how it'll work in live action. And I think it works better hidden away as opposed to being overt like it is in the Matt Reeves Batman. Next story is called The Legend of Newt Brody.
It's written by Paul Dini, pencils by Dustin Nguyen, inks by Derek Fridolfs, colors by John Kalis, and letters by Steve Wands. It's basically the story of different members of the Bat family being this bumbling henchman called Newt Brody, who basically foils crimes of other Gotham villains by pretending to be a henchman, but being one of them in disguise. It's kind of a fun story. I guess this is to Manny's point of, you know, you can't talk about Batman without talking about his the Bat family. And so it works on that level. But for me, the story was, it was kind of fun, but it didn't really do much for me in terms of like celebrating Batman himself and the thousandth issue of Detective. I don't really have much more to say about it other than it's the art's solid. You know, it's very much Dustin Nguyen. I wouldn't need to even read his name to know that this is his art. It's very, very recognizable. What do you have to say about this story, Manny?
It's just fun. It's just interest. It's just interesting because you have all these villains who are so great, but you really come to realize how much they rely on goons and on henchmen.
Yeah.
So they might be masterminds, but they still need quite a bit of help in order to get their plans in motion. So I found that really interesting. Also, just shout out, Condiment King makes an appearance here. So obviously this is great, but the one thing I will say that I didn't like too much about it was it really kind of on the seriousness maybe of the villains, because they can just be foiled by the Bat family at any point just by dressing up as a goon. So, but like I said, it's just a fun story, and it was great to see that it's something that they did together also. Just disguise yourselves. If somebody takes a turn, somebody else takes a turn, and they have, you see that they have fun sometimes, foiling villains instead of just going straight up into very dangerous situations.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I mean, it's funny. It's funny that the, you know, especially the Riddler scene where the Riddler's like, I built this trap and there's no way you're going to figure it out and blah, blah, blah. And then Newt just spills the code. Here's the code to disarm everything. Fell out of a piece of paper in your pocket. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Super funny. Kind of like similar to the classic Indiana Jones scene with the guy with the knife, you know, big giant sword, and he pulls out his gun and shoots him. Are you telling me the Riddler's not smart enough to remember like an 8-digit code? He's got to write it down on a piece of paper. That would never happen, but
again, no.
It's for the story. It makes it funny. So yeah. The next story is called The Batman's Design. It's by writer Warren Ellis. Art is by Becky Cloonan. Colors by Jordi Belair. Letters by Simon Boland. I'm a big Warren Ellis fan. This story didn't really do much for me. I think it's called The Batman's Design. I think the story was supposed to show how with planning, Batman can overcome anything. So he's going up against this group of like anarchists, nihilists, kind of terrorists, people who just want the world to burn basically. And they think they know better than Batman, but Batman actually has been pulling their strings all along, and he kind of tricks them into going to this warehouse that supposedly is their hideout, and he has all these trap set up, and all he has to do is call out, you know, S1, S2, S3, and it's smoke, or this explodes, or whatever, and it allows him to use his environment to subdue all these different criminals, even though he's vastly outnumbered. So I get what it's supposed to do. I just didn't think it was very interesting, and I thought that there were better ways to tell a story that would focus on the fact that Batman's kind of the ultimate planner. Even if it was something as simple as it's always the question, like who would beat who in a fight, you know? And usually it's the one I hear a lot is Batman versus Iron Man. And it's like Iron Man, brute strength, he would beat Batman unless Batman knew where the fight was going to take place and had time to plan. And then Batman would definitely defeat Iron Man. I hear that like argument a lot. And again, because Batman's always prepared, right? He's like the ultimate Boy Scout. He'd be prepared. And so I get what they were going for, and I appreciate that. But for me, it just didn't work very well. I found this one to be really boring. Art by Becky Cloonan, again, solid, but nothing spectacular. She does a great job of showing the action. And the color work by Jordi Belair, you know, is really good, as you come to expect from Jordi Belair. A lot of dark, muted colors. But again, it just, you know, it was just an okay story. So, I mean, maybe that's why I liked Action Comics better. I think, you know, the stories themselves that to celebrate the characters were just stronger overall in that volume than in this one. So what did you think about this story, Manny?
Just based on the creative team, also a fan of Warren Ellis and Becky Cloonan, I was just expecting a little bit more from it. And I gotta be honest with you, I love Batman, but sometimes the one aspect of him that I do find annoying is knowing things ahead of time. Like, I know it's a really, really vague example because whatever, but him having things like shark repellent or him already having ice skates installed in his suit, or just little things like that where it's like he's quote unquote prepared for everything. Sometimes it does make me roll my eyes and think, it's a little much. It's a stretch. I get it. He's ready. He's, you know, or, and then if he gets more time, he's even super prepared. I understand that concept. And traps and everything. And so you have to kind of almost assume that everything's going to go right in order for this story to work out the way it did. And so, I was a little bit let down. I just thought from Warren Ellis we'd get something a little bit better than just kind of a warehouse with booby traps.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it was.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. The next one is Return to Crime Alley. It's by legendary Batman creator Denny O'Neil, who recently passed away. The art is by Steve Epting. We have colors by Elizabeth Breitweiser and, letters are by Ann World Designs. I didn't really see the point of this story. I still don't. It's basically Batman kind of – I don't know. It's like a story about, okay, Batman is damaged, right? We got Leslie Tompkins, who's the doctor that was there to help Bruce, you know, when he was little that night and his parents got killed. And basically the story here is there's a bunch of hoodlums out. On the same night, the same anniversary of the death in Crime Alley of Bruce's parents. And Tompkins is there as well talking to Bruce about, you know, what happened that night and how it was murder and, you know, it damaged you. And then these punks come and attack, and then Batman basically beats them up. And when Tompkins takes the mask off of one of them and says, poor thing, and he says, you feel sorry for him? And she says, no, I was talking about you. I just didn't get it. It wasn't impactful. I mean, to me, it missed its mark. I get what it was supposed to do. It's like, oh, Batman, he's damaged. You know, we know that at this point. This is, you know, maybe the story works, you know, in the 70s. But Batman is so much about the angst and carrying around his parents' murder. And, we see the scene in Crime Alley with the pearls falling. Every freaking Batman movie that's come out, we see it. Gotham TV show, I think it was even in. So at this point, we know that Batman's damaged. We know that, yeah, poor thing, and he's carrying it around with him. So to me, the story just felt like, what was the point? The art by Steve Epting is, you know, typical Steve Epting art, which means, you know, super detailed, really kind of lifelike. Tompkins definitely looks like an old woman here, much more so. Her age varies in the regular book so much, so it's nice to see her here looking like an old woman, because she would be at this point. You know, she was there the night Bruce's parents were killed and he was a little kid, and now Bruce is, you know, this much older guy than she, you know, she would have aged as well. So I thought that was at least one thing that was done well in the story. But other than that, again, just another kind of lackluster piece in my mind, despite, you know, so much respect for Denny O'Neil. I think he did more for Batman as a character than anybody in comics ever. And so I love his work, but this one just missed the mark for me. What are your thoughts, Manny?
Yeah, I was really confused because it's not like Batman engaged these thugs first. He was talking to Leslie on one corner, and they were standing over there. And you know, despite their appearance, he didn't do anything. It wasn't until they saw him and they engaged him with a gun that you know the butt kicking began. So for her to be upset with Batman for taking them down, I was very confused. I just thought it was maybe there's another point to it, but if there was, I completely missed it. I didn't make any sense to me as far as what it was trying to say. That
yeah, the fact he's standing there, you're in Gotham City and there's Batman, and they're like, it's not the real Batman. That's just some dude dressed up in a Halloween costume. What would make you think that? Why would you automatically assume that? Why would you take the risk? That's the real Batman.
Yeah, if you've been in Gotham for long enough, you should know.
Yeah,
and you don't point a gun at Batman. So I didn't like this one. I wasn't sure exactly what it was trying to tell because, for all intents and purposes, these kids should get a good butt whooping, should go to jail, and maybe that's what's gonna straighten them up, not being protected by an old lady. That's not a turning point in your life.
And plus the fact she calls out, you know, when he goes to hit the last kid, she's like, Bruce, no.
Bruce, yeah.
What are you doing? Just gave away his secret identity. What the hell are you doing, lady? So yeah, didn't work on any level for me. So we'll just move on. The next one is called Blame. It's written by Christopher Priest. We've got art by Neil Adams. And it's typical Neil Adams art. So it's, you know, it's very recognizable as his work. Colors are by Dave Stewart. Letters are by Willie Schubert. I'm not 100% sure. I know Neil Adams has been doing like some Batman miniseries like over the last few years. I mean, it's kind of what he's most known for these days is Batman. And those issues in the 70s with Ra's al Ghul. So this definitely felt like part of a bigger story. And I haven't been reading those Neil Adams Batman books, so I'm not sure how this ties in, but it certainly felt like it tied in to something. Because it's basically about the Ra's al Ghul, the League of Shadows, some people that were at one point part of the League of Assassins and wanted to get out. And, you know, going back to Bruce Wayne's roots when he was training to be Batman and he was trained by Ra's al Ghul and was part of the League of Assassins. And he offered help to anybody that wanted to get out of it. And so, I mean, there's even an editor's note that flashes back to Batman Volume 1, number 431, which was, you know, quite a while ago. So when you get to the end of the story, it says, rather than saying the end, it says the beginning. So again, I'm not sure. I think it ties into something going forward. And if that's the case, then great, because this didn't really feel like a complete story to me. And as much as I like Neil Adams' work on the classic Batman, I don't – here he's inking himself or he's working digitally now, and I don't think his art is as clean or as good as it used to be. This isn't his best work by any stretch of the imagination. So, again, I thought it was good. I thought it felt like a classic Batman story, but it felt incomplete, and it just didn't feel like it was as strong as it should have been. What are your thoughts, Manny?
I'm not sure how good Christopher Priest is on really short stories. I know that he's done some other stories that when you kind of broaden them out across several issues that they do a lot better. So I think this is kind of what happened here. It's like, let's set something up that was already in motion and then let's continue it later, maybe. So that way I don't have to explain everything that's going on. So I think it missed the mark in that sense, unless it leads to something bigger, although at this point I highly doubt it. Maybe there was something in the works and then it just got canned or something. But it was incomplete for me, and probably one of the weaker stories.
Yeah, sounds like we're on the same page there. The next one is by Brian Michael Bendis with one of his frequent collaborators, Alex Maleev. And I'll talk a little bit about the art first. I'm not a fan of Alex Maleev. I never have been. I just don't care for his style. I don't think he's, you know, not talented. I don't think that he doesn't belong in comics. It's just his style of art. I just don't like it. It's very muddy in my mind, and it just doesn't do much for me. So the story is called I Know. As I said, Brian Michael Bendis writing, Alex Maleev on art and colors. We have Josh Reed on letters. And it's basically the story of Penguin. He's confronting Bruce Wayne when they're both very old. Bruce Wayne apparently is confined to a wheelchair and can't even talk. And the Penguin has just showed up there to basically say, I could have killed you anytime I wanted. I knew you were Bruce Wayne super early on. Nobody else believed it. And I kept it to myself because I knew if I had that information, I could use it to basically better myself as a villain. But if I would have taken that information and acted on it, gone to Wayne Manor with everything I had, and I failed, then that would have been the end of me. The fact that you had this Bruce Wayne persona was the only thing that keeping me alive, because if I missed and you lived, then Batman would destroy everything I was. And if I did somehow succeed in killing Bruce Wayne, but Batman survived, then that would have been bad as well, because in Penguin's mind, that human side of Batman, the Bruce Wayne persona, is what kept Batman from going over the edge, which we've heard that concept many times before. So I kind of feel like the same way I felt about the first story, I feel about this story. If the Penguin really knew all along, he would have found some way to use it to hurt Bruce Wayne. So I'm not buying it. Story doesn't really work for me on that level. Although I don't want to, even if you haven't read it, but you're still listening to this, I'm not going to talk about what happens at the end, because that part is kind of cool. But yeah, it's just, again, another one of the stories that concept-wise good, but it just has a fatal flaw that makes it not work for me. And I don't like the art. So not a story that that really works for me. What are your thoughts, Manny?
I liked it. This really encapsulates to me who the Penguin is, and that's a coward. And that's really what it comes down to, is he, despite having this information, despite possibly being able to bring down the one person who has foiled his plans, he couldn't act on it because of the possibility of falling short, and then years later trying to convey that he could have is nothing more than somebody who was a coward. And that's something that Brian Michael Bendis makes sure that you know. I really appreciate Alex Maleev's take on the Penguin, which is a Batman Returns, Danny DeVito style Penguin. As a matter of fact, you have the cool penguins with the little rockets. Those are awesome. By the way, Batman Returns is still to this day my favorite Batman movie. I like his style of art in this story, just because it takes me back to that Penguin, to that story. Love it. It's one of my favorite. It's one of my favorite movies. Rumors are true. Penguin Man, the sewers. And then I like the way he makes him really old. He's like, I know, and then, you know, what happens, and good for old man Bruce. I thought it was cool. I was like, all right, Bendis, you did it. You did a cool little Batman story. I appreciate the fact that you didn't try to reinvent the wheel or anything weird like you did with another character.
All right, next story is called The Last Crime in Gotham. It's Jeff Johns writing, Kelly Jones handling the art, Michelle Madsen on colors, and Rob Lee on letters. So a couple things here. Jeff Johns, the only Batman I know of Jeff Johns ever writing is the Batman Earth One stories, where Gary Frank handles the art, and those are great. I love those, especially the SAS version of Alfred. I'm not a fan of Kelly Jones' art. I bought Detective back in the day, even when Kelly Jones was the artist. I've talked before about how I don't like his art. It's too over the top. It's not realistic at all. His anatomy is funky. He draws the cape weird. The long ears. I'm just not a fan. But I like this concept of the story. I would be curious to see what another artist would have done. So I kind of wish there was another artist on it, because, you know, talk about the last crime in Gotham. You know, the story opens up. We've got Batman, Catwoman, clearly married. They've got a couple kids, Damian, as well as a daughter now, Echo, she's called, and the Bat-Hound. And they're a bat family. They're a crime-fighting family. And, you know, as the story says, the last crime in Gotham. So apparently Batman has finally succeeded in his mission of ridding Gotham of all crime. And that's a cool thing. That's an uplifting story, which, again, makes a weird choice for me for Kelly Jones to be the one to draw it, because he's always been, you know, the creepy, dark, brooding Batman kind of artist. So this is supposed to be more of an uplifting story, and it's, you get Kelly Jones on it again, it just doesn't really make sense to me. So I guess highlighting, I'm not sure what the point of the story is, highlighting Batman family ties, I suppose, or solving of a crime. I'm not really sure it works on either of those levels, because it doesn't dive into any of that too much. So again, I'm left feeling like, you know, what's the point of the story, I guess? Like, why, what are we trying to convey here? So again, didn't work for me. It was a concept that was cool, but it just, like a lot of the stories, it's just missing that one element for me to pull it all together. So, and again, Kelly Jones art, which didn't work for me either. So yeah, again, I felt incomplete, felt like it was lacking. What are your thoughts on this one, Manny?
Yeah, I felt that the artwork was very distracting, and that alone for me, to the story, it kind of had me on to really kind of get a grasp of the situation, because I was like, wait, what? He's married? Kid? What? The dog looks cool. I will say that. Robin looks super weird. He almost looks like one of, like the hunter with the voodoo head and Beetlejuice. And then just the way the cowl goes to his back, and it's almost like a straight line. It feels like, and then just like the, almost the derpy look of the daughter. And I mean, I could talk, there's just, it's bad. It's current John Romita Jr. bad.
Wow, that's really bad.
So, actually, no, this might be a little worse, actually. So, yeah, it's kind of a no-go for me, just because I was so distracted by the art, and it was just like, okay, just, eh.
All right, well, moving on to the next one. This is definitely another one of the highlights. It's called The Precedent. It's by James Tynan, so, you know, great writer. You've got Alvaro Martinez Bueno on pencils, who's a really up-and-coming artist. He worked with Tynan on Justice League Dark. Raul Fernandez on inks, Brad Anderson on colors, and Sal Cipriano on lettering. And it's basically about the conversation that Alfred and Bruce have about whether or not Bruce is going to allow Dick Grayson to become Robin. And so this is a real throwback. You know, I did say there weren't a lot of throwbacks. This is one that I felt did celebrate the history of Batman. And I thought the art was pretty solid too, with the exception of there's one panel where we find out Dick has been kind of eavesdropping on the conversation, and he flips down and lands on a piano bench. And for some reason, Bruce doesn't have a nose in that panel. And I don't... I just don't know why he doesn't have a nose. It looks so weird. You never noticed that before?
No.
I mean, whenever I turn to that page, my eye immediately goes there. He has no nose. And I'm like, why doesn't he have a nose? Really strange. It got inadvertently erased or something in coloring. But anyway, other than that, small little nitpick. It's a fun story. It's a story that celebrates the history of the character. And I thought it worked really well. What were your thoughts about this one?
It was cool. It kind of brings to light a little bit of the sidekick aspect of Batman, and kind of what he did make, you know, Robin's and the conversation he has with Alfred about it. And then I just thought that it was just well done. Now that's interesting. I never noticed the nose. I like it that it's a conversation between Bruce and Alfred, just because a lot of times, most of the times, Alfred is 100% the voice of reason, while Bruce is always like, "What's the big deal?" And then Alfred will let him know, "Hey, well, this is why, and I'm worried about this happening or that happening," and so I mean, we've seen what happens to some Robins; it does not end well. I thought this was a good story, kind of to touch on that point. And so it was decent.
All right, up next we have a story by Tom King. We've got Tony S. Daniel and Joelle Jones on art. It's called Batman's Greatest Case. And it's basically all of the Batman family, Spoiler, Red Hood, Signal, Batgirl, Batwoman, Nightwing, all the various Robins, Red Hood. They're all waiting on top of a building for Batman, and he eventually shows up and they take, I guess, what you could only consider to be a family photo with Batman himself saying cheese. Why it's Batman's Greatest Case, I, as much of a fan of Tom King as I am, I think it comes off a little too abstract here. Talks about, you know, the loss and, you know, what would you do if, you know, you lost everything you had, you know, that night your parents were killed. And it kind of points to the fact that this is what I took from it, was that, you know, the question, what do you do when you lose what you can't ever lose, which is he lost his family. I guess you build another one, which is kind of what he's done with the Bat family. And the early on the pages, it's voiceover of the different Bat characters talking to each other, and just the dynamic and the inside jokes and the giving each other a bad time. Very much the camaraderie and how, you know, a real close-knit family would act, giving each other a bad time, that sort of thing. And we even get a little smile from Bruce at the end. So I guess that's the answer to the question. What do you do when you lose what you can't ever lose? And that's been Batman's question, or his mystery, and it's taken him this long, a lifetime of work and pain, and he's finally found the answers. What it is, you build another family. And he ends up walking away from his parents' grave with a little smile on his face. So that's how I interpreted it, but I don't even know if I'm interpreting it right or not. And so in my mind, I think, you know, as much as Tom likes to, you know, delve into emotion and thought and trauma, and kind of, sometimes you got to be a little more on the nose, because I'm bringing a lot of comic knowledge and a lot of comic history and a lot of analysis to this. And I'm not even 100% sure. So I don't know. Sometimes I think Tom tries to be a little too clever. But I thought for the most part, this story did work. And it was great to see all the characters. And the art, spectacular. I mean, you're talking Tony S. Daniel and Joelle Jones. Two really, really talented artists. And I love their work on Batman. Joelle on Batman and Catwoman both. This one worked for me. Also, I thought the colors were handled really, really well. I don't know if I mentioned the colorist, or maybe they color. Oh, yeah. Colors by Tomeu Morey. So he's a great colorist. So no surprise there. Clayton Cowell was on letters. So what were your thoughts on this one, Manny?
No, I love this one. This one was great. Because Bruce was technically left all alone. Besides Alfred, of course, who ends up being more like a father figure. I know we've talked about that several times. Just kind of the precedent of him visiting his parents' graves, and then in between that, seeing the Bat family on the rooftop and bickering kind of like siblings do, cousins do. They know each other very, very well. So you get that family camaraderie. You see that. So despite his loss, despite what happened to his mom and dad, and kind of leaving on his own, he's been able to overcome that and build this with Selina. He has Damian. He has Alfred still in his life. He has a dog. All right, Ace. I think he looks so great on the corner, just happy to be there. And extended family with Kate, and even then extending even further with like Dick and Barbara, etc. So I really liked it, and then just the fact that he's then able, he realizes that himself, and because of that, he takes the photo and leaves it at his parents' grave to say, kind of saying, I'm okay. This is, you didn't leave me alone. This is who I have around me. And then his smile kind of tells me like he feels lucky. He feels don't necessarily see all the time with a Bruce Wayne character. And if anyone's going to do that kind of story, it's going to be Tom King. So I really like this one. This one was my second favorite one. I just thought it was neat, simple, but it tells that entire story of family, which is a very important part in Batman's character. Although he won't never admit it. It's usually a lot of times told by Dick Grayson or Brian Alfred. Definitely not Damian. And it's nice to see it come from Bruce instead of some of the other supporting members, because he's always so broody and he's always protecting and he's always just Batman, and just to see how important all these people are in his life.
Yeah, I agree. After that, we have a couple of splashes. There's one by Mikel Yanin, which is probably my favorite art in the entire book. Then there's a big one by Jason Fabok. And then there's one by Amanda Conner. That is one of the things about this, again, that I thought Action Comics did better. They had more pinups and more splash pages, and I think it just worked better to celebrate and get a chance for us to see artists work on the character. I think part of the reason for that is because of the last story. The last story that tied into the upcoming storyline that Brian Michael Bendis was putting in Superman, that Jim Lee did the art for, was only a few pages. Here, they do the same thing. They've got a tie-in for the upcoming story in Action Comics 1001 by Peter J. Tomasi and Brad Walker. And the Arkham Knight is the villain. But here, they take a lot of pages to flesh it out. So Peter J. Tomasi on words, Doug Monkey, who's the other penciler on Detective Comics when it starts out with 1000. And one, we have Jaime Mendoza and Doug Monkey on inks, David Barron handles colors, and Rob Lee on letters. So instead of you know, more splash pages and more artists or pinups getting the chance to give us their take on Batman, we have this giant story where it is a series of splash pages by Doug Monkey with these dialogue boxes. And one of the things I didn't like about this story is you don't know who's talking. You know now, because I told you, but you don't find out until the very last page that it's Arkham Knight. So when you start reading this, like when I read this the first time, I'm like, is this Batman talking? Is it the Joker? I'm trying to figure out who it is so that the story will have some context, because the story has no context. So what I didn't like about it was I got through to the last page and I see it's Arkham Knight there, and I read it and say, okay, DC Comics proudly presents, blah, 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 this story, this voiceover, what have you, this concept that's being introduced here in this last story is to be continued in Detective Comics 1001. That's great. Now that I know it's this Arkham Knight character talking, now I got to go back and reread this entire story with that knowledge, because now it'll make more sense to me. Because when I was reading it the first time, I kept getting lost. I couldn't really follow it. Like, what's this character trying to say? Because I was trying to figure out who it was that was saying it. And so because of that, I felt like it missed the mark. I mean, even though I get it, you want to have that hook at the end to say, hey, here's this new character, Arkham Knight. Go and continue reading Detective Comics by picking up issue 1001. But being the fact that I didn't know, you know, who it was or whatever, it just missed for me. Just let me turn the page and let me have a big splash of the Arkham Knight. I don't know who the character is. I don't know much about them. But at least I know
you know, and maybe some of you might know more because you played some of the Batman video games. I didn't even have that context to go from. So give me the splash page. Show me the Arkham Knight with that great Doug Monkey art. I'm going to be interested. And then I'm going to read the story with having that knowledge of who's talking. And it's going to, I'm going to get more out of it instead of having to read it twice. Maybe that's what they wanted. Maybe they wanted people to read it twice. I don't know. But for that reason, it kind of, that's what I didn't like about it. I thought it was okay. I think the art is done pretty well. I think that when you tell a story or you do a narrative like this where it's just a series of pinups, obviously you're not really telling a story. So I know that obviously Doug probably tried to mirror some of the action in the scenes where Batman's going up against Mr. Freeze or Killer Croc or the Joker or whoever it might be. He tried to draw on the dialogue or the exposition that was going to be on those pages from the Arkham Knight that's as written by Tomasi, but it doesn't work as well. You're not really telling a story, and so in that way the art and the dialogue do feel a little bit disconnected, and the fact that I didn't know who was talking, you know, also made it problematic in my mind. So I think technically the story didn't work that well. I just don't think it accomplished what they wanted to do. That being said, the art is gorgeous. I mean, especially love the full page splash of Talon and Batman going against each other. But I do kind of wish that they'd kept this shorter or that they had allowed other artists to come in besides Monkey, because if we weren't going to get those extra pinups or splash pages from other artists like we did in Action Comics 1001, why not let them contribute a page or two here or there in this story? You know, maybe have Monkey do, you know, every other one or do, you know, the majority of them, but still give a chance for some other artist to come in and do some work on Batman. So I don't know, just my thoughts. What'd you think, Manny?
Yeah, it was, it's just a really long monologue. And I really feel that it could have been either A, shorter, or B, like you said, an opportunity for other artists to showcase their of Batman art. And then, I mean, just the whole concept of the Arkham Knight character, it was actually ruined from the beginning when they introduced the character in the video game, Arkham Knight. That's what it's called, right? Arkham Knight? Anyway, point is, from the moment they released the trailer, the internet exploded with, that's Jason Todd. That's Red Hood, and the video game developer was like, no, that's not him. And then it was so obvious who it was from the very beginning, from the trailer, that it took away from the game because there's nobody else it could have been, and so it kind of ruined ruined the game because your big surprise or whatever, everyone knew there was just no twist to it. And so with this kind of reinvention of the Arkham Knight, you know, it was supposed to be the super grand story and everything, and I thought that the whole thing fell flat. So going back now and looking at this, it completely feels overdone and super extra for something that did not really last that long and did not have an impact for Batman going forward. Like, it's just a story. There is no where this is a pivotal moment in Batman canon. It's just in a story. The character, there's nothing special about him. I'd even argue that Talon has more pull now than the Arkham Knight ever did.
And so I think part of the reason they wanted to bring the Arkham Knight in to, you know, the canon of the DC Universe was the fact that that video game was so popular. But you're saying that it was Jason Todd in the video game. That's not who it is. We're not going to spoil who it is.
No.
That's not who it is here. And I was, when I found out who it was, I was kind of thrown as well. And I didn't feel like, because I was expecting, like, okay, here's the next great addition to the Batman right. Rogues exactly. gallery. And it didn't really, and I don't know if that's because of who they chose or if it just didn't work. I was surprised who it was, and it, I don't know. Maybe another writer can come along. Maybe they have other plans. Because I thought the concept was kind of interesting with the whole sunlight and eclipse and wanting to cleanse and whatever. But yeah, I don't know. For some reason, it just didn't quite work.
Right. The concept of bringing the Dark Knight to the light, I was like, all right, I get behind that. But there's no investment in the character other than what we had already seen in the video game, which was Jason Todd, which nobody was surprised at from the beginning. And now we're supposed to buy that it's somebody else. And when you find out who it is, most people are just kind of like, who? What?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
And so what do you really care for? Like, you really care for it. So it just didn't work. And then they moved on, and you've not heard about you. You won't hear. Maybe it comes back as like a sidekick to another villain or like a group, but as a solo story, I don't know. Maybe that, but it was kind of flat.
Yeah, you almost wish they could have introduced a character and made it invested in the character, like the character, and then for some reason they're taken off the stage one way or the other, and they just disappear and everybody forgets about them for a year or two. And then they come out with the Arkham Knight in the video game and never tell you who it is. And then they introduce the Arkham Knight in the comics right here in Detective 1000, and eventually with the storyline that starts in 1001, reveal that it was that throwback character. I mean, you're talking tying in video games and comics for a narrative of, you know, 5 years at least it would have taken. Yeah, they don't really do that kind of thing anymore, unfortunately. But that would have been really cool if it could have happened like that.
You could have made it somebody that, I don't know, somebody else Ra's al Ghul had trained who maybe was the opposite of Bruce.
Well, I was thinking the Wraith from that Batman special from 1984, who was kind of Bruce Wayne's opposite number, if anybody remembers that. Great, great story. I think Mike W. Barr was the one who wrote it. Or bringing back, you know, Bruce Wayne had a bodyguard at one point. I can't remember what her name was. I think it started with an S. That could have been somebody. But, I mean, I get it. Like, but the one thing about bringing somebody else that Ra's trained, if it wasn't somebody that we – if it was a brand new character, somebody that we hadn't been introduced before, again, you wonder, like, okay, why should we care? Which is basically what they did. They introduced a new character. Why should we care?
So my idea, and this is a thought, is bring back Thomas Elliot.
That would have been good.
And have Ra's have taken him and bring him back, train him. And now he comes back. Who knows? And who's going to know him better? Who's going to be able to take that mantle? And it's like, whoa, he's a lot. You know, I think that would have.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Been a lot cooler.
Yeah, you could have thought like, okay, Ra's trained him, and then Thomas even turned on Ra's. So now you've got like a three-way dynamic, like. There'd be times where Batman and Arkham Knight might be teaming up to go against Ra's. There might be time where Ra's and Arkham Knight are teaming up to go against Batman. There might even be times where Batman and Ra's are teaming up to go against Arkham Knight. Then you've got a three-way triangle, because you could put it this way, like, okay, Thomas Elliot has his own ideas of what is right and what is wrong. He knows that the actions that he took during the Batman Eternal storyline were wrong, and now he's trying to redeem himself, but he's trying to do it in a twisted way because we know he doesn't see reality the same way the rest of us do. And that could have been like, you still could have used that same concept of light and dark, trying to bring, you know, light to the Dark Knight. That part still could have worked. So, man.
He could have easily fit into like a team with like Lex, because he knows him so well. Or what if he like teamed up with Deathstroke? Yeah. And
missed opportunities.
But point is, you could have brought that kind of character that has staying power. You could use him over and over again, and you can solidify him as a rogue.
Yeah, they could even come out with another video game where we find out that Thomas Elliot manipulated Jason Todd into pretending to be the Arkham Knight for that video game. But now, you know, you do a sequel with more Arkham Knight and it turns out it really is Thomas Elliot.
Well, you can't really do that because at the end of the video game, Batman reveals, well, Scarecrow reveals who Batman is. It's the end. Absolutely the end.
Gotcha.
The rumor is that a fandom, they're going to announce the next Batman game, which is, might be a prequel to it, or I don't know what they're doing, or if it's just a new line of games. But those are really good games. The way you get to drive the Batmobile is kind of fun. It gets a little redundant, but it's fun. You get to drive the Batmobile, and it's more like kind of like the tank, kind of like the Batman Begins style.
Yeah, the Rumbler.
But yeah, Tumbler. So it's Tumbler. Kind of fun.
Yeah, the Tumbler. Okay.
Yeah, but yeah. Oh man, I don't even want to talk about this anymore because like now I'm mad because it's like, oh, it's gonna be so much better. Like, oh. You know?
Well, you know, Detective Comics 1000 could have been better, but it does a good job of telling somebody who's not familiar with Batman from the comics who he is.
I will say, after going through it again, thinking about Action 1000 is a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, I don't think that we're saying that this is not good. I think we're both just a little bit disappointed because we do like Batman as a character. Manny loves Batman as a character. We love who he is. And this was a missed opportunity. It could have been so much more. It's not that it's bad. It's just that it could have been so much more. The stories just, they were almost there. You know, some of them got there completely, but the majority of the stories just were missing that little something. And then, you know, just having more artists be able to showcase their talent on Batman and get to work on Batman, a pinup or you know, a page on that last story like we were talking about, it just would have been fun because that's what we got in Action Comics and we didn't get as much in that in the Detective. So
yeah, it feels like Detective was a little bit more rushed than Action was. Yeah. And there was a lot more thought behind Action, and then because of the success of Action, Detective was kind of put together a little bit more haphazardly than that same care that maybe the Superman one got.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. So, well, we hope you enjoyed our take and our talk on Detective Comics 1000, everybody. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.